Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I actually got the intro right this time.
Except that we didn't really reset the episode count numbers.
Oh, dang it.
Sorry.
Should we fix that?
Well, at this point, I'm either going to leave this in or you're going to start over.
Well, I mean, it's the second episode of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. It might be episode 48 and whatever in the notes. But
so how about 48.2?
48.2, and we're resetting the count from now on. How about that?
Man. Whatever.
Well, I mean, this is the first real episode where we're not delirious of the new rebranded show. I think we should take a little bit of time to talk about what it is that we're doing with the rebranded show. I think for me, it is we stopped kind of talking about points hoarding and gathering of points simply because of the devaluations and things we were seeing. And we started talking more about travel and fun things that we were doing with regards to travel. And I think that's a good segue into this new rebranded show.
I think that the points discussions stopped being quite as much fun and stopped being quite so interesting at the end of the day. I mean, like, yes, we could talk about this is where you go to get points, but that's, you know, the logistics of collecting them and even to a slightly lesser extent, the logistics of redeeming them wasn't nearly as interesting as actually going and doing stuff. And so, you know, we'll still talk about some of the points aspects of things. I know we've got one or two things from that sort of section on the agenda for tonight's chat, but there's a lot more to it than just the points.
Definitely. I think our experience on the last show was kind of part – we planned that to make that the first episode of the new show, and it actually worked out despite our delirious show recording. It actually worked out well because it was an experience, I think, of new dots, new lines, and it was a new it was good. It was fun. Even though I was, you know, I went 30 hours without sleep, it was still fun. So
it was a true test of our travel ability.
Yeah. The part where at the Guam airport, I finally broke down and begged the woman, for the love of all that is good and decent, just give us a gate pass so we can go take a shower. I think that was I delivered quite the monologue at that point. That was I'm still amazed that we didn't get arrested at some point.
I had never heard our producer get angry, and that Guam was the first time I've ever heard him get angry. And he wasn't mean. He was just – he was upset with what was going on.
They were blaming me, telling me that I was a no-show on the flight when clearly I was there.
We haven't really talked about what happened in Guam because our last recording was before that.
Oh, it's true. It's true. We spent 4 hours at the ticket counter in Guam. I mean, that sums it up. They were able to rebook. I'll put it this way: they were able to rebook a 777 full of canceled tourists before they finished with us. That's how complicated our situation was. And So Seth, I'll let you kind of explain what you experienced
with the rebooking.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So I think one of the good things we had going for us is that while we were stuck in Kwajalein, we had, with the brief bit of Wi-Fi service and a T-Mobile phone, we were able to get through – I think it was Faz's phone. We were able to get through and get seats protected for getting us out of Guam. You know, and that was just sort of the idea of just in case, let's block seats before they all go get sold out. And, obviously it turned out to be a good thing given how many other flights, you know, with the other 777 canceling out of Guam and everything else, there was a lot of people looking for other seats. So it was nice to have them, you know, reserved for us in advance. The thing that didn't make much sense at that point, though, is when we finally got to Guam and we told them, we already have these seats blocked. It's a trip in vain. You just need to reissue tickets with these new seats for us. They started doing all sorts of things, rebooking us on different flights. Like, they kept trying to rebook. I was rebooked via Tokyo, Chicago, Newark, you know, quickest way home. And then suddenly my reservation showed Los Angeles in it or San Francisco or just all these other things. And sort of like every time we refreshed, it was broken a different way. And so from the airport in Guam, we got back on the phone and once again called into the reservations. And they once again sort of put everything back the way we wanted to. It got to the point that at one, probably two and a half hours in, I actually went to the counter and was like, can whoever has our passports back there? Oh, that's the other thing. They took our passports and went into the back room to do the rebooking. They wouldn't do it out at the ticket counters. So we had no idea who was doing what was going on or, you know, where we were in whatever queue of processing there was. But we finally basically said, stop working on our flights, bring the passports back out here. We don't want you touching our reservations anymore because you keep breaking them. And we let the reservations folks back in. I don't know what call center they were in, but back in the mainland somewhere, fix all the reservations. We still had to get Guam to reissue the tickets. And so they then broke them again, even like following the specific instructions that were left for them in the reservations. And I actually have the printout of our PNR. Talking about like the guidance saying like, go look up this GG code for how to issue the ticket. I'll see if I can get a snapshot of that for the record, for the script, the show notes. But, you know, they basically couldn't figure out how to reissue the tickets following those instructions.
And to the point where they waitlisted Foz from Guam to Narita, but he had a confirmed seat from Narita to Chicago. That was the best part. I mean, it was terrible for Foz, but it was like, wait. He's waiting.
Yeah, well, at some point, Foz had a seat.
Yeah.
And then when they were rebooking everybody, they dropped it. And with all the flights overbooked, when they dropped it, the flight was overbooked. And so he lost the seat. I ended up taking the downgrade compensation of $300 for that and was fortunate. One of the few who kept the upgrade when I came up to say hi to y'all slipped me a mini. I would like to thank him immensely for that. I proceeded to drink that and fall asleep for the rest of the flight. So that was quite nice. I took my $300 credit and, you know, Foz ended up in the upgraded seat and I had an exit row. So it was fine for me. But it was, they did all sorts of things strange and wrong with that rebooking.
Yeah, it was a long 4 hours ticket counter. And I think we were all a little, we were definitely tired, but we were a little peeved that it was getting frustrating with the agents to deal with them. Because at one point she just disappeared for about 45 minutes. And we were like, well, where'd she go? And there's no one else. Everybody's kind of staring at us because we're standing at these two empty counters just sitting around waiting for this agent to help us. And she never comes back. And when she finally does come back, Seth, I was so glad that you were just like, give me my passport because we'll figure this out ourselves. That was top notch.
The support we got in Guam was less than spectacular.
Yep, agreed.
Downright abysmal, quite frankly.
Yep. Yeah, it was probably some of the worst service the service we received in Kwajalein was better than what we received in Guam.
Well, I think we were just so tired and they were just like, they had no sense of urgency to get us out of there. At one point we were getting close to like almost not making the flight and we were like, come on, get us out of here.
Well, and I was trying to get on the Guam to Honolulu to Houston flight just to get me back in the States. And by the time she even helped us, it was already past the flight time. There was no way I was going to make it. And she's like, well, do you want to go via Honolulu? I said, when? Tomorrow? She goes, well, yeah. No, I do not. Put me on the flight then.
You would have been delayed 12 more hours the next day.
I was going to say, that flight ended up either canceled or delayed the next day too, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
I ended up having to buy a walk-up ticket just to get through security because they still couldn't figure it out 45 minutes prior to departure.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. When we were still out there trying, and I was begging for the gate pass, they wouldn't sell us tickets. I said, I actually pulled out my credit card, put it down on the counter, and said, I need 3 tickets on whatever the next departure is.
I don't care where
it's going. I don't care where it's going. I need 3 tickets to get through security. But first we said, issue us a gate pass as though we're club members. Guam doesn't do that. Really? Okay, fine. Well, I'll let it go. I literally like slapped my credit card down on the counter. I was like, sell me 3 tickets. There's 3 of us standing here. Sell us tickets. And the woman looked at me, said, I have to go find someone who can do that for you, and walked away.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
good times in Guam.
Yeah. Foz, I mean, you ended up using the app, right?
Yeah, I ended up using the app to book a ticket to Pohnpei or Chuuk. Just to get through security. Like she disappeared again. She came back out and like 20 minutes later, I'm like, I have a ticket. I'm going up to the lounge. When you're done with my boarding pass, I'll pick it up in the lounge. And she just said, okay. And just turned around, went right back into her little cubby.
They didn't seem very interested in helping us. I mean, I think they were overwhelmed. They didn't even know that the flight had been delayed so much. 17 hours. You know, what was it? 17 hours by the time we got there, it was delayed.
Something like that.
When we mentioned it to her, we were like, do you realize that we've been sitting on Kwajalein for 12 hours? She just like looked at us like, what flight did you come off of? Like we were crazy.
My favorite was when we got up there, she's like, well, I'm going to help these other people first. I don't know if you guys remember that. I'm like, no, we're just a Scrooge. You're going to help us first.
Yeah, that's right. She did say, well, we've got all these other people that are so inconvenienced. We need to help them first.
Yeah. And we like basically said, was saying that the Premier line was not active because of that. Because we were the only ones in that line.
Yeah, it was an experience. So
anyway.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about tablets. Samsung and GoGo have teamed up to offer a free year of GoGo with the new tablets. Seth, do you know the details on what you got to do and when you got to buy it?
Yeah, there's a handful of new tablets out there, like 5 or 6 of them, I think. And basically buying any one of them will get you built in, I think it's based on the MAC address in the device. When you log on to GoGo, it takes you to a special portal within the GoGo site on any of the North American GoGo carriers, and you get up to 36 sessions as a free year of service.
Nice.
Yeah, and so at one point, what was it? I had the old Google Chromebook.
Yep.
And that came with like 12 free sessions or something like that, that I ended up not using because I never would use it on board, but it was also similarly sort of tied to the hardware. So it's not, you know, unprecedented that they've cut a deal like this, but at this point it's basically anything they sell out of sort of like roughly their 12-inch products. Here we go, the Galaxy Note Pro 12-inch, the Tab Pro 8, 10, and 12-inch from Galaxy. So any of those basically will automatically just sort of work up to 36 flights.
And is there a cutoff for when you have to buy it?
No, any of the what's published now is as long as they're selling it, that will be available.
Wow.
They obviously might cut it off at some point, but so far it seems that it's pretty wide open.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the tablet market and doing, you know, going to be flying a lot of GoGo type routes, it's not a bad deal then.
Yeah, unless GoGo's saying they already are selling, that our users already use tablets 34% of the time, so it's definitely a growing segment.
Yep.
Or if you can find the MAC address and spoof it.
Well, you know, I don't sort of condone those types of behaviors. Sort of.
Let's talk a little bit about the Malaysian Airlines flight. I'm sure our listeners have been beaten to death with the CNN coverage and other news site coverage. But I found it interesting, and I think, Seth, you found it interesting how Inmarsat had kind of narrowed it down to this southerly track now that their Malaysian is saying – as of right now, that's where they think it went, using a Doppler type technique to measure the distances between the pings and the angle at which the pings hit the satellite. I think that was pretty interesting. It's a lot of math, but I thought that was pretty interesting how they did it. I don't want to speculate about the flight. I'm sure you guys don't. But any comments?
You know, I just think the trigonometry behind it and just sort of the fact that, you know, the way they're using the math is very cool. It's one of those fun, when is this ever going to be useful in real life kind of debates, and then all of a sudden it's far more useful than you'd ever expect.
Yeah, I could say our real hope is that they get some closure for the families soon, and you know, I'm sure it's tough for them, and our hearts go out to them, because not knowing is probably the hardest thing. So, but if you want to read a story, we'll post the BBC link that posted how Inmarsat has done the math. So, Norwegian Airlines. They have some really low fares to Oslo and other places in Europe, and they're starting London service. And as a result, Delta and United both have some pretty attractive fares from all over the country to Oslo and other spots, including London from the New York area. You guys seen these fares?
I have not, but I'm going to go looking for them later.
Yeah, I think I saw $455 from Newark to London all throughout the year. Just, I think it's like a 2-day minimum stay, 2 or 3-day minimum stay. There's stuff to Oslo from Fort Lauderdale, which is flown by Norwegian. There's SFO to Oslo. There's a lot of really good fares. They're all sub, you know, $700 and in coach, of course, but very good deals, and you can route them via Newark, and you can actually build stopovers in Europe if you want. It's nice. So go check those out.
This is one of those things where they're using their, you know, the typical legacy carrier routing rules and such, but matching the upstart fare, basically.
That is correct. Yeah. And they're all K fares, but they're using their, you know, I saw one guy routed his via, he did San Francisco, LA, JFK, or LA, JFK, and then stopover in New York, which I didn't think you could do, but he did it. And then Newark to Amsterdam, stopover, and then Amsterdam to Oslo and back. So
nice.
It's nice. I mean, if you want to build in kind of a small European vacation, it's a great fare. I mean, I think he did that for like $650 or $659 or something. So keep your eye out on United and Delta. They both seem to be taking part in this. So definitely some good fares out there.
Nice. Yeah.
And segue right into that, right?
Yeah. I mean, the problem with that, of course, then you're stuck in Scandinavia and have to pay the cost of being there.
You were just there, right?
I was. I was there last week for 9 days. So 8 days, 9 days, something like that. It is not a cheap place to be. there are some things you can do to make it a little less expensive. One of them is practice sobriety, but the it is not a cheap place to be.
Is the alcohol that expensive?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I think the cheapest bottle of wine I saw on a restaurant menu was, I want to say, $60 or $70.
Oh, wow.
The beers we had were $12 to $20 at a restaurant, which, like, I live in New York, so a $10 or $12 beer is just annoying to me. And at least some of the, you know, it's not unheard of, but it is annoying. And these were mostly 500 mil bottles, or at least a full pint, not a 12-ounce pour. But they were, you know, this wasn't, you know, the type of, it's not the type of vacation where you go out and get trashed every night unless you've got a really large expense account to work from.
Yeah. So what did you do there for 9 days? I mean,
we did, actually it was spring break with my wife. So it was, she's her last spring break in college or in grad school. And so we did three days in Oslo, 3 days in Gjelo, which is up on sort of the plateau between Oslo and Bergen, sort of due west along the southern half of Norway. And it's up at elevation, it's skiing and such. And we went cross-country skiing for a few days. Turns out you can still wipe out cross-country skiing, and I proved it. no permanent damage, thank goodness. And then we did a couple days in Bergen.
Nice. It was a good trip.
Yeah, I have to say, it is a spectacularly beautiful country. I've now been twice where I actually got out and saw stuff, and a third time where I didn't. But it is both those times where I actually saw stuff around town, it was stunningly beautiful. Absolutely worth visiting. The fact that you can get such cheap airfares to go there is great. Just, you know, buy a bottle at duty free and make it last, because that's going to be your best chance of drinking. I bought a liter of vodka on the way into the country. They have a huge duty free on arrival shopping there. There's no need to buy before you get there. The prices are fine when you get, you know, in the duty free on arrival. But we bought a liter of vodka, and I finished it on our last night there with a couple of nice pours, sort of, you know, hedging my bets along the way just in case. But we, you never know. Without that, I probably would have been very, very, very sober the whole time. As it was, I was only mostly sober. So.
Well, sounds like a fun trip.
It was. It actually was a ton of fun. I haven't even begun to write it up. That'll happen soon, I hope. But it's a very cool, very pretty place to visit, and highly recommended.
Last time you went to Scandinavia, you went in summer, right? The kayak trip?
Yeah, that was, we did the fjords kayaking, and that was also incredible. And even then, it was, you know, expensive, but it was, we were camping,
you had picnics,
kayaking the whole time. Yeah, it was picnics every day. I mean, that was part of a, you know, a guided tour, so that included the food. But yeah, on that trip when we were in Copenhagen, I was part of that same trip. More than one of our meals was go to the grocery store, pick up some snacks. We did that this time too. We had a couple meals during train rides and such where, you know, and I would do the same thing here. You know, if I'm going to be on a long distance train on Amtrak during a mealtime, you better believe I'm going to go to a grocery and pick up a sandwich before I get on board versus being stuck with whatever Amtrak's going to serve me. So we did the same thing on board with these trains. Went to the grocery, picked up, you know, a loaf of bread, a stack of deli meat, and a stack of cheese, some fruit, and some chocolates. And, you know, it was still like $40, but it was better than buying that food on board.
Yeah, or seeing what you could get for $40 on a train, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually interesting. The train had sort of real food. I wish I'd taken a picture of the menu. They had, like, real food dining options, but it was silly expensive to get at it, so...
So would you recommend going in the spring, or would you recommend going in the winter? Which did you enjoy more?
I enjoyed both. I mean, the summertime when we went, it was, you know, high season, which didn't help price-wise, although I don't really think it was that much worse. And, you know, we had, like, the midnight sun thing is cool. I distinctly remember waking up at 3 a.m. at one of the campsites to go to the bathroom, and it being daylight out, essentially. It was light enough out that I didn't have to worry about tripping and falling.
Wow.
At a campsite at 3 a.m. this trip, much colder. It snowed a few of the days we were there. We obviously had to bundle up more versus it being gorgeous warm weather. But, you know, if you're into skiing and snow type stuff, that's much, you know, Norway's got it. So I think the fjords are probably better during the summer, but the mountain stuff, you could go either way depending on if you're into mountain biking and hiking or into skiing.
Cool. Thanks for the tips.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Emirates not flying to an airport, and I'll let Rolo take this one because you brought it up, Rolo. I just thought it was funny.
Well, our listeners have asked for more Emirates talk, so based on the metrics we got, Emirates is apparently ending flights to Clark Airport in the Philippines. It's very controversial. They're citing a number of reasons, but I guess they have a high fuel tax to fly in there. I had no idea where Clark was. I had to look it on the map. It's, I guess, north of Manila, but it's like in the center of the country. So the flights have only lasted 6 months. And I guess there's other flights. I don't know who else flies in there, but I think Qatar may fly there from Doha.
So do they fly nonstop, or are they making – is this one of those Fifth Freedom routes where they fly Manila, Clark, you know, Dubai or something?
No, I think it was Dubai nonstop to Clark.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We'll have to look up the airport code. Clark.
I wonder if this was kind of an easy way for them to go, we don't want to be in this market anymore. This was an easy excuse to say it's the taxes. Like, it was just not making money?
I don't know. I guess there might have been traffic. The other thing is apparently Emirates is cutting back on flights out of Dubai because of the runway construction. So that might have had something to do with it. It's like, all right, why are we flying to Clark? That's causing delays to all the A380s that have to leave. So maybe that helped.
Yeah, we got to get all 50 of them off the ground within 3 hours of each other. So, yeah.
So the airport code for Clark, for those of you keeping score at home, is Charlie Romeo Kilo. And it was an old air base that the U.S. Air Force operated out of, and it's become a commercial airport. So.
And the loads were 50%, apparently. That's what the
I was going to say. Well, at the end of the day, that's the real. So it was a low cost carrier hub for a while, and I think sort of these other carriers showing up was a bigger deal.
So what city does it serve? Is it the city of Clark?
Yeah, there's Clark. There's all this. There's like a whole Clark area. I guess the city's called Clark.
There's stuff up there, but it also does sort of serve Manila.
Oh, okay.
They fly a 77W.
That's the smallest plane they have, isn't it?
They have some 330s. Yeah, 330s and 342s, I thought. 343s.
345s. They have 345s.
Yeah. So that's it's kind of overkill, I would think, putting a 77W on that one. Although, I will say this. I found out the other night that Delta flies JFK Dakar on a 757 regularly. Had no idea.
Don't they use Dakar as their Asia, as their Africa hub?
Well, they don't do that anymore. They abandoned that. But they used to fly JFK and Atlanta to Dakar on a 75. And there's a tech stop westbound. I forget where.
That's incredible. It's 8 hours easy, and I would think it's pushing the range of the 75.
Well, absolutely. Which is why they have a tech stop on the way back. Yeah.
So other flights serving Clark or other airlines, Tiger Air, Cebu Pacific uses it as one of their main hubs. They're a low-cost carrier based in the Philippines. Asiana has service. Jin Air, which is another Korean carrier, JIN, has service. And Emirates in Qatar both also have those flights.
And you could take a bus and the LRT line 1, and in about 3 hours and 22 minutes, you can get from Manila to Clark.
So wait, is Manila served by Emirates as well? So they're serving essentially Manila twice.
I guess the northern parts, there's probably a lot of people. There's something called Valenzuela City and Quezon City. So those are more on the outskirts. I guess they would have a choice. There's actually a town called Pandi that's over there as well. And it's an hour by driving, apparently. It's like 96 kilometers.
Okay. Interesting. You learn something new about every day about an airport.
Hey, dots, lines. I mean, that's what we're here for now.
And on the same, token about new and ending service, Uber is starting service in Auckland. I think it's already started. We'll post our Uber code so we can get credit. Who gets the credit, though, out of all you guys?
We should post all of them and see who gets the most. It's a contest.
It's a contest.
Whoever didn't get the last credit card link.
On the website of, I think it's Business Traveler for Australia, they put in a note at the bottom. It says, disclaimer, we'll also pick up $20 of Uber credit when you take that ride.
No kidding.
Nice. It's in parentheses.
Oh, that's good. Delta redemption rates have gone up. We kind of touched on this a couple shows ago, that Delta was changing their reward system and earning and burning of miles. That whole system's changing. And they finally released some charts. Seth, you have a little bit more. And I think, Foz, you know a little bit about this. So I'll let you guys talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, they, as promised, it's a 5-tier chart now instead of a 3-tier chart. So that's part of the fun. You know, the areas where the chart changed, most of them went down. The couple areas that went up were sort of the top tier premium, or the sort of the highest tier for domestic awards. So like the whatever the 5th tier chart went up like 5,000 points for from 60 to 65 or something like that for domestic. First, domestic coach round trip. The rest of it, they basically added more tiers in and or dropped the redemption cost in a lot of places. So not a ton of the lowest rates dropped, but a lot of the mid-tier rewards dropped. The big open question still is sort of what are those 5 tiers going to map to and how often are each of those options going to be available? And, you know, until there's any sort of booking opportunity next January, we won't really know. But I'm cautiously optimistic.
I would also add, we'll see if the website can actually price things properly.
Sure, but, you know, that's details. No different than today.
Exactly, but, you know, they can't get 3 awards level down. How are they going to get 5? So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, fair point. It is worth noting also that partner awards will remain only available at the lowest level, and that includes positioning flights on Delta Metal for a partner award. So if you need to get to, you know, an Air France, KLM, whatever, Korean Air, Gateway, you've got to find low awards seat space on that domestic feeder.
Wow. So they're not going to allow you to mix and match a little bit at all, really. They're just going to say everything's got to be low for partner awards no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that if they may do it the United style where they'll let you do a sort of rule buster award, but you still need the low inventory on the partner.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
But they do allow one way, so you could theoretically find one way saver and then the other return and peak or whatever, level 5, I think it's called, which is ridiculous. And some, like, if you look at the chart, it's like 350,000 or something like that to Southeast Asia.
That's a round trip price, though. So
Yeah. Well, still.
But still, no, it is. I mean, someone found a 740,000 point round trip award the other day. Somehow there's some weird bugs or troubles in the way the Delta site calculates some of the awards, where instead of just, you know, figuring it out, it adds a bunch of awards together kind of end on end or something, or just makes up numbers and keeps multiplying. But I'm cautiously optimistic. Maybe that makes me an idiot, but wouldn't be the first thing that did.
Well, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a plug, Seth, because you did some analysis on the earning rates and, you know, kind of how it would work for you if you were traveling for work still. And I found it interesting because it would, in my case, if I was doing the same thing, if I was doing work travel and all that travel went to Delta, I would actually probably do pretty well under the program, probably better than I do right now on United. But I think what you said earlier is the key is what are the redemption rates? Are they going to be available? Is there going to be enough availability to make sense for me, right? I mean, I could have 1,000,000 miles, but if I can't use them, then what good is it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think, you know, my theory on that is, so there's, you know, let's say it used to be 25, 40, and 60 for the 3 domestic round trips. Now I think there's like a 35 and a 50 added in. So if any of those trips that would have been booked at 40 now come in at 35, or any of those people who are going to book at 60 now get a 50 every now and then, that's a win. That does, you know, the average cost of an award should decrease based on this.
True. Yep. Good point.
Should. Obviously, you know, what they actually release in terms of inventory in each category and what people book remains to be seen. But I think there should be maybe not as significant as some of the earnings reductions, depending on sort of what level of spend you've got in your travel patterns. But there should be a reduction in award costs, especially if you weren't booking at the base level every time.
Yeah. Faz, I have to ask, did you book any of the Delta mistakes in the next year?
No.
No,
because you couldn't. They were all. It was happened on December 26th.
Oh, if that's right, I forgot. I was going to say it'd be cool to see what shows up next year for you, like how you do on mileage wise. It'd be an interesting study, but we can't.
That would have been pretty sweet.
You would have your $50 fare would have netted you as a diamond. Are you still diamond?
No, I'm nothing.
Okay, so it would have netted you 250 points.
Yeah.
Great opportunity to credit that to Alaska, except that by next year, that might not be an option anymore.
It's probably spot on. So who will Alaska sleep with next?
They'll go with American. I'm going to stick with American. That's my prediction. Although United might try to do something with them, too.
Well, United's did pick up a new Brazilian partner.
Oh, yeah, Azul. I forgot about that. Got to add that in the notes.
The fake JetBlue?
The JetBlue of Brazil. That's right.
The JetBlue of the South.
Yes.
It's same a bizarro JetBlue.
It is. It's the same founder. They do live TV on board.
And it's called Azul. I mean, come on.
And they have Menta now for the mint.
Yeah. When they had their premium long-haul product. No, they actually held a contest for what to name it. And, like, the winner would receive, you know, lifetime supply of free flights or something like that. And they did the whole thing. And whatever the name is that actually won the contest, Dave Neilman, the CEO, looked at it and was like, okay, you can still keep the free flights, but we're not naming it that. We're naming it Azul because that's what I actually want. That was a few years ago.
I was looking at the route map today, which isn't easy to find. And they serve a ton of places in Brazil, but nowhere outside of Brazil.
Right.
So it's almost domestic. It's a domestic carrier. Because I was kind of hoping to use them to tag on to go to Argentina, you know, hat tip Rolo. But I couldn't. So I guess I'll go with Avianca if I end up going down there.
I think you should do LAN and go fly through Chile.
and get the better wine, yeah.
Sure. you said it, Rolo. I mean,
yeah, it came from your mouth. Hey, you need to copy that down, Seth, when you do the editing. Yeah. We need that. On that note, though, I think it's time for the Rolo rant, and I'm going to turn it over to Rolo and just take it away.
The latest episode of my rants comes from Panama, and it's a United-based rant. First of all, the check-in doesn't open till like 2 hours before the flight, and they don't have automatic kiosks. They have the Houston flight and the Newark flight leaving at the same time, so the line to get in was just crazy. We finally check in and, you know, go through security, and the security in Panama is, you know, just like the USA. They have the TSA signs. After the TSA, I went and had a burger, so I was really thirsty afterwards, so I got a bottle of water. And then it's time to go to the gate, they have another X-ray machine. You have to go through a secondary screening. And there was a United representative who had the suit. I thought he was a GS rep, but who knows. So I asked him, I said, you know, you guys don't tell us that we can't buy water before we get on the flight. And he's like, well, there's the signs there. And he points to that 3-2-1 sign. I said, yeah, the sign's here. But, at the ticket counter or check-in, it doesn't say you will have secondary screening on flights to the U.S. And he's like, well, in any case, you could buy water on board. I said, okay, well, I don't know when the last time you were on a United flight, but they don't sell bottles of water on board. You get it for free. But you can't buy – there's no way to buy a bottle of water unless I'm wrong. I mean, I will issue an apology if I'm wrong. But as far as I know,
Was there a water fountain? Was there a water fountain past secondary security? Or was it the gate?
It's a roped off gate that you're just in like for, it's not big enough to hold a 738. There's not enough seats, and the security people won't let you stand too close to the ropes essentially. So wherever there is extra space to stand, it's off limits. So I got yelled at a couple times for standing too close to the edge. And then two other guys were close to the edge, and one guy went under to go out of security to go buy a hot dog. He buys a hot dog for him and his friend and then passes the hot dog into the secure area, and it was chaos. They made both of them go through security again with their hot dogs, and they just
put the hot dogs on the X-ray?
Yes, the hot dogs have to go on the X-ray.
Do they go in a separate bin each? Or
I could only see that they actually had to put them in. I don't know if it was one bin for two hot dogs or it's one bin in each. But it was pretty funny. I mean, I was kind of tired anyways and very delirious. But it was very funny. And my upgrade did not clear, but I passed out for the whole flight, essentially.
Did you notice that the X-ray machine is actually on wheels? Because it's actually, they just bring it out for that flight or the flights to the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. Some of those gates, you know, I'm guessing in other times are used for Copa.
Well, yeah, Copa has the same problem, even when you fly Copa back. Because when we came back from Montevideo, we had to go through the same thing. And you would think with the new terminal, they would have just designated a few gates like they did in Paris or somewhere. At the end of the concourse, you go through secondary and you're there.
Stockholm has that, I think.
Frankfurt still does that.
Munich, I think. Yeah, Munich, you go all the way to the end, and all the United flights are like the Dulles and
Newark. That's funny though. Down at Munich, though, is a rope off the area, right? It's just roped off. It's weird. And then you go through. They have like the security screening, but they don't make anyone go through the X-ray or the metal detector half the time. They're just like, oh, just you know, go ahead. You don't look suspicious. I guess
yeah. That's the one where they just ask you the questions like, have your bags been with you the whole time? Who packed them? Is there anything in them? And then they wave you through.
Yeah, but then sometimes they make you go through the metal detector. I've been there twice in like 2 months, like back to back. And 1 month it was you have to go through the metal detector. So the next month I'm expecting it. I'm getting my laptop ready and everything. And they're like, oh, just wave me right through. I'm just like, okay, well, all right. Sorry. It's good for me. Maybe they're using those new TSA, behavior analysis tools and figuring out who's a threat. I don't know.
Yeah.
So since we're talking about security, I've got a question. Has anyone else noticed that they're dumping the elite lines into pre-check lines at more and more airports?
Yes. Not just the elite lines, the regular lines too. And Newark, at least.
Yeah, I found out, I was talking to the guy today, he goes, yeah, it's not our decision, it's the management's decision at the airport.
And TSA management or airport management?
You made it sound like it was the airport management or, you know, in this case, United, because this was at Newark. But they were hand-swabbing anyone who wasn't in the pre-check line before they got to the ID validation point.
Wait, they were swabbing their hands before they checked their IDs?
Yep.
What?
That's a new one.
Jeez Louise. Oh, I'm not even flying today. I forgot.
Yeah, I got picked for the random whatever going through pre-check the other day, and they swabbed my shoes, not my hands.
That's a new one, too.
Yeah, and then he made sure to tell me it was my tax dollars at work getting me a shoe shine. took a lot of self-control not to accidentally flinch and kick him.
So you got a shoe shine this week, and you got the weather last week.
Yes.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man. Well, do you guys have any upcoming trips?
We'll be going to Peru, possibly.
When's that?
2 weeks.
Nice.
And Shannon this weekend. I forgot. I'm going to Shannon. Did you know there's no chain hotels in Shannon?
Yes. It's also a dump. How long are you staying?
A day.
That might be too long. Are you renting a car?
I could.
One-way rental.
Yeah, one-way rental. If you go down and west to Dingle.
Okay.
Among other things, it's fun to say the word dingle. And then I just knocked my mic over. I got so excited about the word dingle. You can either do that or you can head north up the coast towards the Cliffs of Moher, which is spelled M-O-H-R, not M-O-R-E.
M-O-A-R?
M-O-H, like Harry, R. Not M-O-A-R.
No, he was kidding. More like more.
Yeah. It took me a second. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, those are the two things I would do rather than staying in Shannon. It's a dump.
I was wondering, like, I couldn't really find much. I'm like, what the hell does one do with Shannon?
Go to the airport and leave.
And we just lost our two Shannon listeners.
I'm okay with that. those are the two places I would go to visit. Look up drive times. I think Dingle's probably a little easier and closer. And there's sort of a road through the pass up over the top and then a sort of down around the coastline. You can sort of go one way on the up end and one way on the return. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
I would not recommend trying to stay in town.
No, I finally found a room at the Park Inn at the airport. Like, that'll do it since we have a 9 a.m. flight back.
Yeah.
What about you, Seth? Head anywhere?
I got a Hamburg coming up, actually. I'm going for the Aircraft Interiors Expo this year. It's one of the largest trade shows about aircraft interiors every year anywhere in the world. And so I'm actually really excited about it. I'm working, writing for Runway Girl Network and doing some interesting stuff related to that, and which means I'm getting paid to be there, which is awesome. It's actually an interesting process of planning that trip because it's a work trip. So in theory, you know, I have a little bit of flexibility with the budget, but the United wanted way too much for the nonstop flights to fly in a middle seat because there's like three or, you know, there's, I think when I looked, there were 7 seats available for assignment in coach and they were all middle seats. Only one of them was an economy plus, and that was the non-reclining row right in front of the exit. It was not going to be good. And so I ended up booking connections to get there, flying via DC, where I'm actually going down extra early and I'll leave the airport, you know, rent a car, go out and actually see my family down there for a few hours and then take the late, late flight. There's a 10 p.m. ish flight, Dulles to Frankfurt, which is, if you're looking to sleep on a transatlantic flight, it's got to be one of the better options out there from the East Coast, I think. It's late enough that you can basically climb on board, pass out, and wake up when you get there and not worry about anything. And then from there, I connect up to Hamburg, nice and easy. And on the return, similarly, I wanted to try German Wings, which is now the new, like, Lufthansa, not so much Star Alliance anymore, carrier. And then I'm flying via Stuttgart because I wanted the Stuttgart to Newark line.
Prepare to be disappointed.
By Stuttgart or German Wings?
Both. I've done Stuttgart twice. It's actually not a bad airport. It's small, and
yeah.
The United Gate is quite nice, but like the area is pretty nice. And they get, since it's a 7.5, they get it out pretty quick. Arrival is kind of a pain because they have like one passport checkpoint with two guys working it, and one line is dedicated to EU citizens,
Euro.
Everyone, and the other one's dedicated to everyone else. And on a full 7.5.2, I was in business class, so I got through pretty quick, but I didn't see anyone from coach come through in the time that I grabbed my bag. So I'm sure they were there probably for an hour, hour and a half. I don't know.
Wow.
But
I'm doing outbound immigration, so that should help. But.
Yeah. No, it's not too bad going out, and they're really nice there. And there's a nice little cafe. You can get. I know you don't drink coffee, but they have tea and stuff. So.
It doesn't get in around the same time as the Delta flight, does it? Because that would suck.
No. The United flight comes in. It gets in usually really early. I think it was like something like 8 in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, and I think the Delta
flight, it's like 7:30. Yeah, because the westbound is 9:30 or so.
Yeah, and I think the Delta 10, flight gets in much later. Like yeah.
So, you know, that you guys have an interesting – you triggered something interesting. I'm curious, and, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever noticed this. The legacy continental hubs, they never have late flights to Europe. Like United, you know, there's a 10 p.m. to Frankfurt from Dallas. There's also one to Frankfurt to London and something else. Chicago has late flights, but Newark never does. And I don't think Houston does either.
Yeah, Houston doesn't. And the Munich flight won't be very late either. I think it's like 6 o'clock is when it leaves. Houston Munich flight. I'm trying to think. There's two San Francisco Frankfurt flights during the summer, right? One's later.
Yeah, but neither is very late.
No,
it's 4 and 7, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and 7. They're not super late. And same thing with the Heathrow flights. One leaves around 4 o'clock and one leaves at 7.
Yeah,
but 7 o'clock is pretty late for West Coast of Europe.
Absolutely.
I mean, I feel like when I did Vancouver Frankfurt, it was at like 2.
That's way too early.
Yeah, made it really hard to sleep, so I just drank another bottle of champagne until I passed out.
Or you could do San Francisco to Munich, which leaves at like 10 p.m. at night, San Francisco time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but you get in like afternoon. 7.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is the continental flights were always timed for connections onward and for getting the plane, you know, getting people back so they can make all the onward connections out of Newark. Whereas the late flights on Legacy United were more about O&D traffic, I think.
Well, think about it, though, right? You know, a lot of these flights are back in Newark by noon. You still have 6 hours to connect to just about every destination they fly out of there.
Yeah, they're not quite noon, though. I mean, the Oslo flight, which admittedly was one of the later ones, but doesn't get back until like 2:30.
That would be the anomaly. Most of them get back before noon or just after noon.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it really is about trying to push passengers, connecting passengers versus O&D traffic is how it seems to me.
Yep. Rolo, what about you? Go anywhere?
On Thursday, I'm going to Argentina for a wine tasting of great wines.
Great wines?
No, I'm not. I'm just going to Argentina, but I probably will be drinking one. We'll be drinking some wine. It's the end of the summer, so it actually's like not as hot. And it's one of those L.A. to Argentina AA flights. So I have to go to L.A. on Wednesday to catch my flight. But I will get the 321T or whatever the heck it's called, the Airbus.
Oh, nice.
But I'm still waiting for an upgrade. I actually asked Foss today if it's an international onward connection, you're not eligible for an upgrade. But he said I was wrong and that I should be. So I got to call in about that.
Interesting. Have a good.
Are you hoping for the freebie, or are you using? I guess you're an EXP, so you don't have E500s, right?
No,
but it's supposed to be a EUA essentially. I mean, it's a business fare, so.
Oh, so you're supposed to go from business to first?
Yeah, for the LA to Buenos Aires flight.
LA JFK.
Yeah, sorry, JFK to LA. Yeah, I think that's how it works, right? Under domestic flight at least. I don't know. I mean, Dougie could have hit his hand in there already.
Have you tweeted the American Airlines account? They might ask you how your cookies are.
Or say thank you.
Yeah.
I think that kind of wraps up the show, guys. Want to go around the table? Foz, tell everybody where they can find you.
On Twitter as FozM and maybe on UPGRD.com/Foz.
Rolo?
I am on Twitter at MundoSurfer, and I still am on Tumblr at mundosurfer.tumblr.com.
I'd like to congratulate both of you on actually remembering your URLs this time. It's much improved over the last performance. I'm Seth. I'm Wandering Aramaean, WANDR.me.
I'm Stephen Seagraves. You can follow me on Twitter at SCGraves. You can follow us at DotsLines on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook, which we've never mentioned really. DotsLines Destinations on Facebook. And the new website is moredotsmorelines.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Hasta la vista.